Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. I can remember the defining moment that got me interested in military history. It was English class, junior year in high school. Now, keep in mind, this was the dark ages, before the interwebs, before Amazon. Our small school library didn't have much of a selection, but I was attracted to the cover art of one book in particular. It showed a furious aerial dogfight. That book was titled 1,000 Destroyed, The Life and Times of the 4th Fighter Group, and it described in great detail and quite a bit of humor the details of American pilots who joined the war before the U.S. got involved as volunteers with the Royal Air Force and the Eagle Squadrons. There's a lot of characters in that group. One who, with all due deference to our guest today, is still one of my favorite fighter pilots, Kit Hoffer. He wore his hair long. He flew his missions wearing his old college football jersey. He had 15 aerial victories before him being killed on a strafing mission. That led me to learn more about these World War II aces, folks like Joe Foss, who was the leading Marine ace, Medal of Honor recipient, and became a close friend of my grandfather after the war. And who can forget Francis Gabby Gabreski, the son of Polish immigrants, the leading ace in the European theater. He's one of only 7 combat pilots to become an ace in 2 wars. Now, I never served in the military, but I did fight forest fires for 3 seasons. And I know from firsthand recollection that very often you can get in a situation where your life, your safety, can really depend on the training, the courage, and the awareness of the man or woman in the line next to you. In my case, it did. Twice. Fighting a forest fire alone would not only be stupid, it would be probably very ineffective. The same applies to combat, in many cases, in our own life. We don't fight alone. Joining us on American Warrior today, we have a guest who is intimately familiar with the wingman concept and, from a broader perspective, the elements necessary to build a team that doesn't fight alone. He's a command pilot with more than 3,600 hours in the cockpit, 1,149 of those in combat. He currently serves as the wing commander at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, one of the largest installations and flying operations in the entire U.S. Air Force. Colonel Joseph Turnham, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Thanks, BBG. It's great to be here today, and I greatly appreciate you and John and what you guys do and giving us the opportunity to talk a little bit about what our airmen do.
Well, I tell you, it's a thrill for me because with the world situation, I haven't had somebody actually in studio for a while here. And we are, even though we broadcast in multiple markets, it really is an advantage to us to have Davis-Monthan and just the outstanding airmen associated with them. And, of course, Fort Huachuca and some of the others right here in our own backyard when we need them.
Yeah, absolutely. And very grateful to be able to come in today and just to interact a little more with those nonverbals and just to have this, you know, a conversation.
So. Now, Colonel, your family history goes, as far as military, all the way back to the Revolutionary War, I think. I mean, there's a franchise there, huh?
It does. My 6th great-grandfather fought in the Revolution, was at Yorktown, Valley Forge, there for the surrender at Cornwallis, and then stayed on after. And then throughout, I've had several folks, you know, most recently my father, 23 years in the Air Force. And I think what you find, BBG, is that's not actually that uncommon. About 85% of folks in uniform now, it in some way, shape, or form, it's a family business.
Do you really... I love this because we're going off script already, Colonel. But I mean, one of the things is I've been doing the show for 8 years, and the kind of the idea of our country developing a caste isn't the right word, but a warrior tradition where more and more of the burden is placed on fewer and fewer families over generations. Are you seeing that? I mean, that's been your personal experience.
Well, there's certainly that we need to avoid that. And that's why I think forums like this are so important because, you know, we do live here at Davis-Monthan. We have fences, we have walls, and they're there for a reason. But that also separates us somewhat from the population that we've raised our right hand to serve. So I think it's important to get out and have these types of conversations because, as you said, I've seen on your website, 99% don't do that. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that doesn't make one better or worse than the other. But we do need to have these conversations because you do get a little bit separated and lose that contact. So
I'm going to draw on my extensive experience interacting with the military, but a lot of our listeners don't have this experience. To me, it seems very natural for a chemistry major to become a fighter pilot. But most folks may not get that transition.
Maybe not so much. I guess I occasionally blow things up as a fighter pilot, so so maybe there's some chemistry there. No, I had thoughts originally of I was going to be a doctor, and then started taking some flying lessons and said this is pretty awesome. So went down this route instead.
So your transition into the Air Force was not the academy route.
No,
it was.
It was actually OTS, Officer Training School. So I'd already graduated. Did not do anything at the at college with it. Just afterwards, again, thought I was going to medical school and was pursuing that route, and then started taking flying lessons.
Now, did you, of your own volition, choose the slowest, ugliest aircraft in the inventory, or did the Air Force make that decision for you?
Luckily, we aligned on that. The Air Force sometimes has a tendency to tell you what you want, and luckily that aligned with what I wanted, and I can't think of a better mission. For me personally, it just really resonates with me being able to do that attack mission.
And of course, we're talking about the A-10 Warthog,
yes,
which is one of my favorite aircraft. And I'm busting your chops a little bit, Colonel, but you know, Gabby Gabreski flew a Thunderbolt II.
Thunderbolt One,
right? The grandfather,
right,
of what you're flying now. So there's some tradition there.
There is, absolutely.
What for you in the cockpit doing this mission? Because you're technically, are you a fighter pilot or you're an attack pilot?
Explain
the difference.
Well, obviously we're biased and we train the attack pilots here for the whole Air Force. With regards to the A-10, but we think they come out, they start as fighter pilots, and we turn them into what we think is an echelon above there with a little bit of an attack pilot.
Yeah, we talked about the original Thunderbolt. The origins of ground support, I mean, there was a lot of strafing in World War II, mm-hmm, but does a ground support mission trace its lineage back that far, Colonel, or is it we'd really have to get into Vietnam before we see specialized aircraft?
No, I see you would definitely see that in World War II, and in fact, if you look at our A-10 demo bird right now, it's painted up with Invasion Day, Normandy markings, delineating that coming in and doing those types of ground support missions.
If you don't mind, sir, I'd like to talk. You talked about we don't fight alone, and in preparing, mm-hmm, for today's show, sir, my original thought was because of your background, most recently you came to us after a position with NATO, mm-hmm, working with our Afghan allies. But really, in thinking about it and going further in these, I use the air quotes, interesting times, and the burden that places upon the families, whether they're in the military, just out there in the community. I mean, the whole idea that we don't fight alone doesn't just apply to combat. It really, particularly during these times, applies to all of our lives and your responsibility for how many families out there. How many airmen? 11,000, 13,000, 14,000?
We have 11,000 on the base. About six of them are directly in my chain of command, and the rest are in our mission partners. And then we have about 46,000, so roughly 50,000 folks who are with retirees and families on or associated with the base here.
And I tell you, A-10 is one of my favorite aircraft. You also have a mission out there that is also one of my favorites, and that's the pararescue mission. You've got other things going on out there, but really those are the two main roles, correct?
Yeah, you nailed it, BBG. It's rescue and attack. Those are the missions of the 355th Wing, and that's what we do.
Very often we see the A-10's role, Colonel, is ground support, and really that's it, was this by design, because A-10s are often used to support rescue missions, or is that it just happened to turn out that way?
I think you can go back, look at the lineage of the A-1 Sky Raiders in Vietnam. So there's always been some version of that. And it was just a natural evolution into the A-10 based on the speeds and the armament, the protection it provides to be able to support those rescue assets.
So there were some practical synergies there
in
this decision.
The way that plane was designed, yes, it's very well suited to that mission.
Outstanding. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about We Don't Fight Alone with Colonel Joseph Turner. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to go for the global picture and then drill on down to the local picture. We're going to talk about his time working with our Afghan allies. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Every day, your safety and freedom is protected by the service and sacrifice of our first responders and military. Please join us in this community effort to build the Southern Arizona Veterans and First Responders Living Memorial, a place to celebrate those who have paid the price for our freedom and those who continue to defend it today. Help create a space where these memories, past, present, and future, will live forever. Learn more and donate by visiting vfrm.org.
Diamondback has been your hometown source for all of your shooting and personal protection needs for over 17 years. We stock handguns, shotguns, and rifles from all of the major manufacturers, including Glock, SIG, Smith & Wesson, Ruger, Colt, LMT, H&K, CZ, Mossberg, and Springfield. You will find the biggest selection of holsters in southern Arizona at Diamondback, along with all the accessories needed to maintain your firearms. Don't forget optics and the best ammo prices. AR parts are available from Magpul, Troy, Volter, GG&G, Surefire, and Odinworks. We are a Class 3 dealer, so be sure to ask about silencers. They're legal to own and hunt with in Arizona, and they make shooting more enjoyable. Training classes for novice through advanced students in pistol, rifle, and shotgun are now available. Pick up a schedule today for more details. We now have a full-time gunsmith on site. Everything from basic gun repairs to custom metalwork and Cerakote finishing. Diamondback Shooting Sports is located at 7030 East Broadway and is open 7 days a week. 886-8338. Find us at dbackshootingsports.com.
To those of you holding the blue line, listen up. Since opening their doors, the Trident Grill has always supported the men and women who wear the badges of our local, regional, and federal law enforcement agencies. That is why right now, all four Trident Grill locations and the Trident Pizza Pub are offering a 50% discount to any uniformed law enforcement professional. All day, every day. 50% discount on your meal for any uniformed law enforcement officer at all Trident Grill restaurants. Visit TridentGrill.com for menus, hours, and locations. Thank you, and stay safe.
It's those guys from Tucson Appliance Company.
Are you starting to go stir crazy?
Do you need to get out of the house?
Do you want
to
eat delicious food and support local restaurants?
Want to snap fun pictures and post them on Facebook?
We're having some fun and calling it the Tucson Appliance Company Local Restaurant Hunt.
With one winner per week and one lucky person winning the grand prize at the end, a $4,000 shopping spree at Tucson Appliance Company.
Check out the Tucson Appliance Company Facebook page for all the rules and details about the Tucson Appliance Local Restaurant Hunt.
These days, we're all paying more attention to our health, but when's the last time you thought about your doctor?
Do you have your doctor's personal cell phone number? We do, and she answers personally.
Does your doctor recognize the expense of health care and only bill in 15-minute increments? Do they care enough about your privacy to only maintain paper records? Does your doctor make house calls? Ours does.
Dr. Lori Thomas is our hometown family doctor. She practices medicine the old-fashioned way. We love her approach, and you will too.
Be healthy and happy by visiting LoriThomasMD.com and tell her American Warrior Radio sent you.
Pima County has a true leader in Sheriff Mark Napier, a professional sheriff serving all of us, recognized as one of the top sheriffs in our state and nationally, elected by his peers as the vice president of Arizona sheriffs and major county sheriffs. Sheriff Mark Napier, endorsed by County Attorney Barbara LaWall, the Tucson Metro Chamber, and all Southern Arizona sheriffs. A sensible voice on border issues, leading the way on law enforcement reform. A professional sheriff. Vote to re-elect Sheriff Mark Napier.
Paid for and authorized by Napier for Sheriff 2020.
I've been a fan of Jen and Eli Crane since they first came on our show following Bottle Breacher's appearance on Shark Tank. The staff at Bottle Breacher used 50 caliber ammunition downrange. They now use them to produce the best gift and promotional products on the market. American Warrior Radio uses logo-branded Bottle Breachers, and our fans love them. Now, you as a listener can save 20% when you visit BottleBreacher.com and use the code AWR20. Truly unique and personal company gifts made by veterans. Visit BottleBreacher.com and enter the American Warrior discount code AWR20. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Colonel Joseph Turnham. Burnham. Cool call sign. Yeah, sometimes some of the call signs you can't say on family radio.
Yeah, I got lucky.
You got lucky. Colonel, we're talking about the concept that we don't fight alone, and I'd like to, what really spurred me about your background was one of the roles that you just recently came from, and I'll probably get this wrong, but basically you were in charge or in command of the NATO mission in Afghanistan to help train their Air Force. Is that kind of the Reader's Digest?
That's roughly accurate, yes.
You know, when I think about Air Forces around the world, Afghanistan doesn't rise to the top, and I think there's a group that ranked them 90th out of the 97 Air Forces in the world. That, what kind of a challenge was that?
Well, it's an incredibly big challenge, and hat has to go off to all the men and women from, well, we had 13 different nations that came in to help support that mission, to do that, to in effect build an Air Force from scratch, which is an audacious, but at the same time, a very exciting opportunity. It's not often you get to do something like that.
Sure. Now, so you were, and I just, these numbers, they're off the interweb, sir, so who knows if they're accurate or not, but 288 airframes, half of which were helicopters, But again, you say you're building it from scratch. You're not just talking equipment. You're talking the personnel as well, correct?
And I mean, the personnel is probably the biggest thing. You can buy aircraft, but training the personnel on how to employ them and really maintain them, that's the more challenging piece because that takes time.
So to the heart of We Don't Fight Alone, let's ask the first question, why?
Why do that?
Why are we training the Afghan? And I don't mean that disrespectfully. Yeah. I think it's a direct, I mean, because they really were first world. I don't know where they would rank in that, but when was the last time they were actually in a shooting war with their own aircraft? Was it the Soviet invasion?
Well, they've been doing that for some time.
Okay.
And they're certainly doing that now. So we see them doing, there was some, when I got there, they did some pretty amazing attacks. I saw them putting laser guided rockets inside of apartment windows to take out snipers that were there after an IED attack. So that, having done those types of employments myself, I can tell you that they're pretty challenging employments, and they did that all on their own. So there is some capability, and we're trying to grow that.
And that capability has grown in just the last couple of years? Or when, I mean, when did this mission actually begin where it's like, okay, we've got to put this thing together from scratch?
Yeah, it's transitioned from a few different times, but I would say around that 2010 timeframe is when this really took off over there. The numbers do change, as you say, you know, the numbers of aircraft that are funded and what's actually required over there has changed. But yeah, we're continuing to try to build those folks so that the why is simply so that they can defend their own country themselves. And so we don't have to be over there, or at least our presence doesn't have to be as large.
I am so glad you mentioned that, sir, because really when you look at the history of our nation, and I think this is important for our listeners to understand, and previous guests have emphasized this, our men and women in the military fight not just to protect our freedoms, Americans' freedoms, but they're protecting lives and families and ideas all around the globe. And so ideally, we want the Afghans to be able to protect themselves, but also we want to bring our folks home sometime down the line, don't we?
We do. We do. We definitely like being home. So we want our folks to be able to come home and focus on, you know, defending our nation, which they're doing over there, but to be able to come back and prepare our readiness.
So often people see the media 12 strong, and we see guys on horseback with AK-47s. We don't think about attack aircraft or helicopters, but really, I read a Pentagon report that ranked of all the military forces in Afghanistan, their Air Force and their Special Forces are really the two that have really stood up and are doing a good job.
Yeah, you're spot on, BBG. Those are the two that we would say are the absolute wins over there. They're SOF, or Special Ops Forces, and their Afghan Air Force.
You know, sir, I have to share a personal story, and it made me think about our conversation today. Years ago, before you were born, when I was an honorary commander at the 12th Air Force, I hosted some visiting airmen from the Colombian Air Force, and we took them out to a baseball game. And I remember having a heartbreaking conversation with a young lieutenant, and their aircraft, they brought them up for, is it Red Flag at Nellis?
They do, yeah.
So they brought these planes up, and bless their hearts, these things were, I mean, baling wire and duct tape. And he's looking out at AMARC, at our boneyard, and we've got 4,000 aircraft sitting out there. And he asked me, he says, what can you do? And it broke my heart because there's nothing I could do about getting them better aircraft. But that came to mind when I thought about the Afghan Air Force. Is there, how much of what they're using now is old stuff, and how much is new stuff, like one of my other favorite aircraft, the Super Tucano?
Yeah, it's a mix completely on that. The Super Tucano, the A-29, that's what I flew for the most part over there. And interesting, you mentioned the Colombians, because when I learned to go fly that, there was two Colombian pilots in the squadron down at Moody Air Force Base that are training people how to fly that aircraft.
And sir, for folks that aren't familiar with that aircraft, kind of describe it. I don't want to say it's going to be the replacement for the A-10, because that remains to be seen. And it's really a complete, sort of a different airframe.
Yeah, I don't think the replacement for an A-10 is probably a good characterization. It's what they call a light attack aircraft. Mm-hmm. So it's a two-seat, front and back, single-engine propeller aircraft that's designed to do close air support, ground attack.
When I see it flying, it sort of reminds me of a P-51
that's
in many
exactly
ways.
I mean,
it's
the
a
sound.
Beautiful airplane.
It sounds wonderful as it flies by, yes.
Now, one thing about the challenges when we talk about not fighting alone and our Afghan allies, they don't fight in English. They fight in Dari. Is that the correct?
It's
I may
a,
not
it's
even
a
pronouncing
mix.
It right.
It's a mix. And there's also, if you're in the South, there, the Pashto. Mm-hmm. So there's several languages in that country. But For the aviation, it is typically, if anybody besides Afghans are involved, it is in English. But if they are just fighting with Afghans, then they will probably go to Dari.
So just explain to me how that works. So when you're training, you're not just training the pilots, you got to be training, because I read somewhere it takes about 2 years from scratch to get a pilot up to speed, to get them in the cockpit to be reasonably capable. But it takes a mechanic 7, 8, 9 years to get them to that same level of proficiency. So when you're over there training, you're training the whole mix, right?
Yes, absolutely. And the English language training is probably the biggest thing, the biggest piece of that, because you have to get them to the point where they can speak some type of English just to get into basic just military training, to say nothing of, if you can imagine, trying to learn aircraft mechanics, aircraft maintenance. That's a completely different form of English. So there's a significant language barrier that needs to be overcome, and that's a big step that has to happen. And then you have to grow those maintainers. It takes years.
It never crossed my mind, but if I'm not mistaken, the language of aircraft communication all around the world is English.
It is.
But manuals, mechanical manuals for aircraft, are those printed in English? Are they printed?
Some are. Ours are. With us providing most of these aircraft, they were in English. But there certainly are a language, you know, the Super Tucano is a Brazilian manufactured aircraft. So they have manuals in Portuguese.
The cultural challenges also of doing something like this. I think I read that this past summer, the Afghan Air Force stood up their very first female combat attack pilot.
They did, as well as a first squadron commander.
When you look at their history and their culture and the religion over there, that's huge.
It's yes, it is a major step forward, and that's what you see, I think, in more of the newer generation, and we see that with the head of their Afghan Air Force over there trying to get those changes going forward. They're more on board with, you know, putting the most capable person forward.
Do you? And by the way, you haven't been on American Warrior Radio before, but I'll tell you, I ask a lot of dumb questions, and it's okay to say I can't tell you that, it's classified. But I mean, if you were. You were there for approximately how long in this role?
It was about 11 months. It changed a little bit, the role there throughout, but 11 months.
Is it safe, or can you even predict at which point can we just pull the chocks and they'll be okay? Because you're right. I read about they've been conducting missions on their own. They're very capable. What really came out or struck me, Colonel, is also the percentage of times where they declined to deploy weapons because they were concerned about civilian casualties. Those little things that really show a high degree of sophistication from top to bottom in their air forces. Could we pull the chocks now, somewhere down the line? I mean, where, from your perspective, where are they as far as doing their own job?
Yeah, thanks, BBG. It's a spectrum. Okay. So you're right. We've seen that, and we were very, very proud to see them in situations where they are getting yelled at to employ weapons, and they see the women and children, they're not going to do it. That discipline and that professionalism, we're proud to have, we'd like to think that we helped instill that. So in some of those situations, we see units that, and we have, in fact, pulled back our instructors on those because they know how to do this. They have reached a capacity where they can create their own air crew in certain platforms. But then the spectrum goes to some of those maintainers. And it takes, as you said, 7 years to grow sometimes an expert maintainer, and they're not there yet.
You know, in doing my show prep, I found it interesting. Our forward air controllers, the ground attack, the folks that are on the ground telling you, yes, burn them, deploy, no, burn them, or, you know, lasing the site. My understanding for the Afghan counterparts, that final decision on whether to deploy the weapons doesn't rest with the ground controller. Or is it FTAC? Is that the right phrase?
The names have changed. Okay. as they change what their qualifications are. And I don't want to get too much into the ROE on the rules of engagement on that, on who owns the bomb. But ultimately, what we try to teach is, you know, if you see something up there, don't do something wrong.
Okay. All right. Who owns the bomb? I like that. Can I use that?
That's not mine, but we'll trademark it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking about the concept of how we don't fight alone with Colonel Joseph Turnham. He just took over command of one of the largest Air Force bases in our entire United States Air Force. When we come back, we're going to drill down a little bit to how that works with the families during these interesting times. Stick around.
Military life can do a number on your back. Did you know chronic pain affects 44% of military personnel? The Joint Chiropractic is here to help, offering a discount on chiropractic care for active and retired military members and their families. Come in now to experience the Joint's exclusive military pricing of just $19 for your initial consultation, exam, and adjustment. Open evenings and weekends. No appointment or insurance required. Visit thejoint.com for a location near you in Tucson. You have our back. Let us help you with yours.
There's never been a better time to get out and enjoy our great outdoors and improve your health. Whether you're a recreational cyclist or a competitor, check out Tucson Endurance Performance Center. Owner Brian Grasky is an F-16 pilot and competed at the national level. He knows the importance of quality equipment kept in top shape. That's why Tucson Endurance Performance Center has the most experienced techs in town. Check out their variety of bicycles, equipment, and gear at TucsonEnduranceCenter.com or stop by one of their two locations, northeast corner of Oracle and Orange Grove, or in the Crossroads Festival Complex at Grant and Swan.
At the Brush Fire Barbecue Company, we recognize that the freedoms we enjoy every day are owed to the men and women who have volunteered to protect our nation. We offer a 10% military discount and encourage Tucson to do the same. And the next time you're in the mood to celebrate America, stop by one of our Brush Fire Barbecue locations, 22nd and Kolb or Campbell Avenue just south of Glen. Need to feed an army or maybe a small group? Call our catering department or visit brushfirebbq.com. Brush Fire Barbecue, Tucson's habit-forming barbecue.
During this crisis, government has taken every opportunity to mask your liberty, making you dependent on them. Don't do that. Let us guide you so you can declare your financial independence. I'm Eb Wilkinson with Imus Wilkinson Investment Management. That's imuswilkinson.com. Call us at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
For some people, difficult transitions like retirement, divorce, or loss of a loved one may contribute to feelings of hopelessness or even thoughts of suicide. The risk of suicide is even higher for men over 50 who've served our country, guys like me. Support from friends and family makes such a big difference. Every day, your actions could help save a life. Learn how you can help at VeteransCrisisLine.net.
Trust. Whether you're protecting our streets or our nation, you have to trust the man or woman beside you. Curtis Plumbing has developed a reputation of trust over 40 years, and you can count on their honest, hardworking technicians to properly diagnose and fix the problem the first time. Then Tucson's most reasonable rates, always a discount for seniors and members of our military. From the smallest job to a complete install or remodel, Curtis even provides 24 hours of emergency service. 323-7697, CurtisPlumbing.net.
Mortgage rates are at historic lows. Refinance and save money now or get into your dream home. The Dellinger team at Nova Home Loans finds you the best rate. 440-0516 or azfamilyfirst.com. Sean and Tiffany have a special passion for helping military and first responder families. Anywhere in Arizona, Colorado, California, or Nevada, the Dellinger team, azfamilyfirst.com. Nova Home Loans, NMLS 3087BK, 0902429. Equal housing lender.
PVG here. COVID crisis or not, for me, a great burger is essential. If that describes you, visit my friends at Divine Bovine on the corner of Wilmot and Speedway. Your nose will confirm you made the right choice even before you open the doors. Unique flavor combinations lovingly handcrafted from 100% USDA blend of chuck, brisket, and short rib, or my favorite, the farm-raised bison. Trust me, these will be the best burgers you've ever tasted. Always a 10% discount for members of our military and first responders. Start your taste buds dreaming at DivineBovineBurgers.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Colonel Joseph Turnham, Burnham Turnham.
That's it.
I still like that.
Yeah, I got lucky. What can I say?
He just assumed responsibility for one of the largest Air Force bases, installations, both installation size and number of personnel. Yes, sir?
Yes. I don't know that we're at racks and stacks, but it's a fairly large base.
Well, and there's lessons that all of us can learn. And really, sir, what I'd like to do now is expand the idea of we don't fight alone out to a broader perspective. We talked about our Afghan allies and what. Not, and I'm glad you emphasize this. Not just us, but 13 other countries are doing over there to make sure the Afghan people can step up and protect themselves. And I tell you, I mean, that country's been at war forever, hundreds of years. I mean, somebody's always picking on Afghanistan.
It was not really when we got there. They were at war for some time before.
Yeah. Let's talk about the idea that we don't fight alone when it comes down to the individual lives. And I was talking to you off the air. It's not like the bad guys of the world said, oh, COVID, time out. We'll stop doing bad things. You and your comrades still have a responsibility to defend our country. And that means sending men and women overseas. That didn't stop just because of COVID.
Not even close. We have continued to meet every deployment tasking. We have airmen deployed across the globe every day. And we just sent out last weekend, I was at Nellis. We have some units at Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada. And I was out there to see them off as they left to go to the Middle East to continue to do just as you're saying there. So
that didn't, not a single hiccup.
Certainly, like everybody, we're a microcosm of society, right? So as everybody took a little step back with COVID, we had to adjust as well. But we have been able to still meet every requirement, every tasking, and our readiness has not faltered.
Let's talk about the idea. Let's start from the military perspective and then go down to the family perspective, if you don't mind, sir, because not everyone can be a GQ cover model fighter. Attack pilot.
That was the last guy.
That was the last. Touche. He's probably listening right now from Nellis Air Force Base and saying, yeah, he's right. So how many hours for 1 hour for Colonel Turnham in the cockpit in combat, how many other man hours does it take to keep that aircraft flying and capable?
Yeah, it's a lot. You know, folks, you would just see, you know, an A-10 typically flying a 2 hour sortie. But that's probably an 8 to 10 hour day for that, just the pilots flying that. And then you think the maintainers, you know, they're there for a couple hours getting those aircraft ready to fly. And then on the backside, there's several hours of maintenance that'll happen, even if nothing's broken on that aircraft, to get it ready for the next sortie, whether that's that day or the next day. So there's a lot of work that goes on. And that, even if it's not turning wrenches, it is just a big team effort. You know, air power is a team sport, and it's all hands to pull this thing off, especially you talk A-10 or our Blackhawks or our C-130s. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are not brand new aircraft. And our maintainers can keep these things flying. It's pretty amazing.
Let's go beyond wrench turners. One of the two of the best change of command speeches I ever heard were delivered by a dentist, an Air Force dentist. And again, that's one thing that we as civilians, we don't think about. We might think about the plane, the fuel, the bombs, the wrench turners, but all this other stuff where our men and women of the Air Force or any branch don't fight alone. We're talking dentist and medical, and somebody's got to make sure people get paid and get fed and all those other things that support this infrastructure and that you're responsible for. No pressure.
Yeah. Well, I have a great team that actually accomplishes this. So you're absolutely right. And it's funny you bring up medical. Our medical folks here, our medical group, who have termed themselves the Honey Badgers, they have a great program, the continuous medical readiness. So they make sure that every airman is ready to go out the door. And once a year, they go through and get all the requirements squared away. And that has paid huge dividends. If you think back, it was some tensions with Iran this last January, and we got tasked, and we were able to get folks out the door within a couple days. And that's in large part because of efforts like that from the medical group. And as you said, it's the logistics squadron. It is just a team effort to be able to pull this off.
One might naturally assume, sir, and people, you know, the reason I support, when people say, Ben, why do you do what you do? It's because, honestly, when I'm out there at a change of command, I am inspired by these young men and women, and I gain motivation. And when I think about the idea that COVID, okay, we're all now working from home in our jammies, and just kind of the general malaise that I see or feeling of depression and downturn in the business world, in the private sector world. And then I think of the men and women of our military where it's almost like, hey, a new challenge. Let's step up. And, you know, it's like, well, we've got all these new rules. Let's see what we can do to get it fixed.
Yeah, it's not new. I mean, there have been wars in the midst of pandemics before, and we just have to learn to, because as you said, we're going to continue to make sure that we are ready to defend our nation. And it is a new challenge, and it changes as the conditions evolve or devolve, depending on how the pandemic's going. And that's where we've really empowered our leaders down in the squadrons who know our individuals, and as things change, to be able to do what they need to do to continue to execute the mission while still making sure they take care of our folks.
Are there any things, sir, that from a practical reality have COVID has put a little bit of a wrinkle in the step, or is it just? I mean, I'm clearly medical is an obvious, but I mean, bullets are still flowing, people are still eating, and
they are. It changes how we do business. You know, that with same precautions that everybody's using with masks or plastic barriers or whatever the case. Sometimes we do some events virtually. Sometimes we do get folks together. But we're just finding new and creative ways to continue to get after the mission and take care of our folks.
As a wing commander, how much latitude do you have to make those decisions?
Pretty good leeway. The numbered Air Forces have done, and Air Combat Command, who we fall under, have done a good job of empowering wing commanders, and we pass that down to be able to continue to get after the mission.
So really, in civilian terms, you're kind of the mayor / city manager of a pretty good sized small town.
Yeah, about 50,000 people.
Let's talk about the individual, because I do, for example, I just did a briefing for the spouses of newly arrived officers there at the base. And we talk about things to do and support systems. And I was actually talking to your chief spouse about I'm talking to spouses, there's a basic support infrastructure there. But there's a lot of single airmen as well, who may be away from home for the first time in a big city or just someplace they're not accustomed to. And what is the additional burden that they bear or the challenges that they face during? It's hard enough, but now in the time of COVID where people are getting more and more, you know, it seems like with technology, sir, we're the most connected we've ever been, and yet we're the most disconnected we've ever been. As a leader yourself, what additional challenges that create for to make sure they know they're not fighting alone, whether it's on the maintenance line, in the cockpit, or just on the weekend during their downtime when they are not leaving their dorm?
It's those interactions, making sure that they're not just holed up there in their dorms, because there is that a little bit of isolation now with COVID, but encouraging still have venues. Whether it's we have chaplain events every Sunday night for single airmen to come get a meal and some fellowship, or we have our close airmen support teams. There are tons of resiliency resources that we have available, making sure that they're aware of those. But then really what I think it comes down to is just personal leadership. It's just talking to the airmen, seeing how they're doing, knowing them personally. So to be able to recognize, hey, you seem like you may be having a tough day today. What's going on? So to know them and be involved in their lives, I think that's really what it calls for, is just hands-on personal leadership.
And the reason I ask that, sir, is, like I said, in the private sector, in the business world, I'm always looking for ideas and things that we can learn from how you all do what you do. But you still are out there walking the flight line, or you are able to physically interact with your employees, I use the air quotes, because you still have a job to do. But in this time where a lot of us in the private sector, folks are just are separated. Is that, what would be your advice? Is that a matter of just picking up the phone, not on a Zoom call, and checking in once in a while saying, hey, hi, you know, calling your accountant or whoever and say, how you doing? What's going on? What can we do to help? Or
yeah,
what's your advice?
I can't tell our civilian counterparts what to do. They have their own organizations, but I know for us, needing to make sure that we care for our folks and we avoid, you know, destructive behaviors that come from, I mean, we're social creatures. So if we become disconnected, we need to make sure that people retain those connections so they're able to take care of the mission. So we're taking care of them so they can take care of the mission. So yes, I am continuing to get out. I have, we still, where possible, provide distancing and those types of things, but occasionally we do come together, for, like I said, for meetings. There is some interaction that happens there. You mentioned the chief's spouse, who does a wonderful job with our spouses. And just yesterday, Chief and I do a thing on Fridays. We call our walkabout, where we just get in the car and we drive, and wherever the car takes us, and we just walk into that unit and just talk to some folks and just see what's going on. So just getting out there, using precautions safely, smartly, but getting out there.
What's the reaction when you walk into a hangar or someplace and an airman, you know, two stripers sitting there, and all of a sudden here's the boss?
Yeah, it's we've just started doing it, so it's pretty unique. But in general, they seem pretty excited. It's a little bit surprised, but excited just to have that interaction, and just to, you know, we're not there, we're not checking up on them, we're not looking for anything. It's really just to see how they're doing and just to talk with them.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host. We're talking with Colonel Joseph Turner about the idea that we don't fight alone. And when we come back, we'll be talking more about how that applies more with just the bridge between the civilian and the military world. Stick around. At The Specialist, they know the best quality window tint, paint protection, and alarm systems can defend your car. They do their job whether you're thinking about it or not. The Specialists remind you to take a moment to pause and thank those men and women who are protecting your rights, your freedoms, and your family. Many are doing so today, whether you're thinking about it or not. If you're a member of our armed forces looking to protect your vehicle, please visit any of the three locations in Tucson and one in Sierra Vista. Ask for your military discount. You've earned it. Find out more at az-specialist.com or call 795-430.
Hey friends, if you're thinking of downsizing or selling your home for any reason, there's never been a better time, but don't do it alone. Give my friends David and Rebecca Guthrie from the Hacienda Group a call at 520-406-4702. They have the connections, tools, and support to supercharge selling your home or even helping you buy the perfect place. If you're in the military, ask them about the special Military on the Move program. Learn more by visiting hacienda-group.com or tune in to hear David and Rebecca Saturdays at 11 a.m. right here on KVOI. Long Companies Realty, BR 566-85-4000.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee is working to identify transportation priorities for the region. These priorities will guide development of an RTA continuation plan for projects beyond June 2026. The RTA's current 20-year transportation plan is funded by a state-established, voter-approved special taxing district within Pima County. To learn more about RTA's continuation plan, funding options, and how you can provide input, visit rtamobility.com.
Friends, there's never been a more important time to support the men and women of our law enforcement agencies. You can do your part by registering for the Southern Arizona Law Enforcement Foundation Poker Run. On November 21st, you can enjoy a ride through the gorgeous Tucson Mountains and win some very cool prizes. Motorcycles and off-road vehicles are welcome. Registration is only $25 for the driver and $15 per passenger. Register at soazlef.org or just give them a call, 207-2878. Since 2003, the foundation has been providing equipment, training, and technology to help protect those who protect us. If you can't make the ride, please consider making a donation. Visit soazlef.org.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Whether you're a member of our military, a first responder, or a hardworking civilian, a good cup of coffee can help you take on the storms of your day. Start your Java conquest at Filthy Pirate Coffee. Veteran-owned and operated, Filthy Pirate Coffee produces premium, low-acidity, non-bitter coffee for scallywags just like you. All their beans are sourced from family-owned farms, so you can feel good about the coffee that makes you feel good. Pick up some coffee from the Pirate's Port at 2040 Orange Grove or place an order for delivery via filthypirate.coffee. Join their merry band today, filthypirate.coffee. You've pledged to protect our nation and community. Why not let Sandy Egg Tassati, your local farmer's insurance agent, help you protect your family? Sandy has 30 years of experience as one of farmers' leading agents. She specializes in serving military families and stands ready to review your existing policies or provide a no-obligation quote today. Sandy will help you protect your family with the same commitment and passion you have for protecting our nation. Call the Sandy Egg Tassati Agency at 520-881-8000 and get smarter about your insurance today. Again, Sandy Egg Tassati at 520-881-8000.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking about the concept that we don't fight alone with Colonel Joseph Turnham. Turnham?
Yep.
It took me a whole show to get that right.
Hey, but we got it.
We're talking with Burnham. We're talking with Joe. about how the idea that we don't fight alone. We start off talking about what we do to train our allies when it comes time to war, and now we're talking about families. And just, sir, I led off with the wingman concept, which is not really a concept. I mean, it's a whole way of life, isn't it? The idea that, and folks, what is it, Top Gun? I will not leave my wingman. But the idea is something that the Air Force and many of the other branches have worked very hard to integrate into just the mindset of people in the service, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a pilot, that's air crew, that we do go out very rarely, single ships and one aircraft. We'll go out there, and when we're fighting, we go as with a wingman, and we take care of that wingman. And we've translated that concept down from the sky to the ground. As we look at building resiliency, you're right. It's not just an event. It's a way of life. And you have those wingmen. I have mine, and you know, I'm their wingman, and we just look out for each other.
Is that something that you have found is even more, or requires even more of an emphasis in these interesting times? Because again, sir, I don't know what you see in the military, but out in the private sector, there's just a bad vibe is the only way I can describe it. That's not very scientific, but there is just a malaise is the only word I can think of, and it's not my first language.
Yeah, I trust you're talking about with the pandemic right now. We certainly do. We're concerned about the resiliency of our folks as they lose some of those interactions. So what we've told the team is to, you know, smartly accept risk wherever we can. We have some events. We just had a wonderful event last night. We inducted our next group of senior non-commissioned officers that have been selected for promotion. So normally this is a big thing at a, you know, JW Marriott Star Pass type event. We couldn't do that, but we found a way. So we were outdoors, still had an event, had some speakers. It was just still a way to celebrate and to come together, but smartly, masks, social distancing, all those things. So we just have to find ways to continue to do those things. It's just a little different now.
Now, you happen to be responsible for a very large, small town in Tucson, Arizona, but these lessons apply no matter where folks are listening, whether military, civilian, or something in between, a nonprofit.
I would think they're probably transferable. Again, everybody's location is going to be a little bit different, and you know, we monitor very closely what's going on both on our base in Pima County, in Tucson, and Arizona. So, and we try to adjust based off of that.
Let's talk a little bit about the concept, because one of my favorite shows that I had on was when we talked about where, you know, when an airman deploys, the whole family deploys. And we had two spouses on the show, one whose spouse was deployed overseas at the time and one who was still home, here on the home front. When we talk about we don't fight alone, a lot of that means that you also have to have the courage to reach out, right? To be able to ask for help.
Yeah, and that's something we work very hard at is that saying it's okay for somebody to raise their hand when they need a hand, and to not be stigmatized by that, to actually celebrate that, because you know, at times life challenges us all, and as you said, we're not alone here, and we have a big team around to support, whether that's at home or at work, and we need to all come together to help each other through it.
You've had a pretty darn long career in the Air Force. Have you seen some positive changes in the way, because, you know, we've had Medal of Honor winners on the show and Navy SEALs and Delta Force and pararescue men who've got a chest full of ribbons. And there's this alpha male, female, I can do it alone idea that really is stronger in the military, but for good reason. But so therefore, I think that you have a special challenge of telling folks, look, it's okay, like you said, to raise your hand. Have you seen the military get better about that?
I have. Okay. Yeah, I think we have. I think that can do. We'll get the mission done. That attitude is not gone, but we've added to it, and we've become stronger because of it.
I don't know if this happens in Air Force basic training, but so often when you see the movies and the drill sergeants yelling, it's like, hey, you better learn to work together as a team or you're all going to fail individually. So that idea of you're not fighting alone starts off early on in the process. And if I'm not mistaken, and I've got some folks in the lobby who correct me if I'm wrong, but even some of the special forces have a way of, I mean, they're looking to weed out the Rambos of the world.
Yeah,
they don't want that guy. And the idea of there's no I in team, but as that applies to you and your leadership now, do you see that as something that is part of your daily responsibility and those of your wingmen to share?
Absolutely. I mean, I've said before, you know, air power is a team sport. It takes all hands to accomplish the mission. And so we need to work together as a team. What you find is typically individuals who can't work as part of a team as well. They're not going to do very well.
You've had 1,100 hours in combat in the cockpit, which seems to me like a ton. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll take a few more.
Well, yeah, that's a whole nother discussion about how one of the downsides of leadership is you don't get to go out and blow stuff up, as you said, on a regular basis. But Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, are there any moments that come to mind when we talk about the idea that we're not fighting alone that stand out in your career where you witnessed that or you're even heard about it and you said, wow, that's the dictionary example of why we don't fight alone?
Yeah, I mean, pick a conflict. If you go back, I mean, to our beginnings, right, in the Revolutionary War, we were not fighting alone. I don't think we've had a foreign war that we have fought alone. And certainly, I think back to Churchill's quote, the only thing worse than fighting with allies is fighting without them. We always do. And so you mentioned some of those places that I've had the privilege of flying. And, you know, yes, everywhere that was with a team, probably whether it was an Afghan or an American on the ground or a Brit on the ground, or am I flying with, you know, I refueled off a Singapore tanker. I remember flying a sortie there, but my wingman was a Navy exchange pilot, and we were working through SATCOM, satellite communications, to a ground controller who was an Army ground controller, and we were supporting Syrian Democratic Forces. So it's a team effort across the board.
I've heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but even now our pararescue capabilities have gotten so good that now even foreign militaries are like, no, I send the Air Force PJs. I don't want anybody else. Is that, can you confirm or deny that,
sir? I don't know, but I would think that would be pretty smart because our rescue team is pretty phenomenal. And I know that's across the enterprise, but certainly here at Davis-Monthan, that is the case. We just, for the third year, we had one of our units win Rescue Unit of the Year.
Wow.
We've got some great folks, some great rescues. In fact, they just did one about a month ago, about 500 miles off the Pacific or the West Coast. They rescued a Chinese sailor, a Chinese merchant marine, who was injured. And they went out there, and this was a joint effort with some of our Total Force, I think it's Guard, reserve members out of California that they joined forces with and went out there and rescued this this Chinese sailor.
Colonel, we're running out of time, and you wrapped it up in a nice, beautiful bow, because right there's an example of how that sailor, he wasn't alone.
Nope.
And there's multiple agencies. Real quick, just a minute left, sir. Can you, what is the hardest thing you've had to do as a commander, and what's the most the joyful thing?
I'd say the most joyful is just watching our airmen grow and accomplish the mission and watch them crush it. I firmly believe the accomplishments of a leader are measured, or the measure of a leader is based on the accomplishments of the led. So watching our airmen grow and watching them just crush the mission, that is by far the best thing.
Colonel, I look forward to following your career.
Yeah. Thanks, BBG. Look forward to talking with you again.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. You can find this podcast and others, AmericanWarriorRadio.com. We're on Stitcher. We're on Apple. We're on something even called Deezer. You can find us no matter where you look. Please share these important messages with other people that need to hear them. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.